Okay, so hey everyone and welcome back to another episode of Default Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and tech leaders from all around the world to share their experiences. Our guest today is Samay Sharma, CTO at Tembo. Samay, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And your path from like a Microsoft and now as a CTO at Tembo has been, you know, remarkable. So I guess we should start with that. Could you share some highlights of this, you know, professional journey and what kind of sparked your interest in working specifically with Postgres and its ecosystem?
Yeah, so I actually started right out of college working with Postgres. So if someone asks me, you know, what databases do you know, I say Postgres and I stop there because that's basically been kind of what I've been working with for now. This is the 12th year. So I was hired, my first job out of college was at a startup named Citus Data. And we were building a bunch of extensions to scale Postgres across multiple nodes. So make it a distributed database. That was my first job. So there I did a bunch of software development work to start. And then I started working with customers. And working with customers was very fascinating and also very humbling in a way because they are very clear about what they want, what they don't want from the product. And I spent the next 6-7 years being customer facing in a very technical role, but still working with them to make them successful with Postgres. And in the journey, I fell in love with Postgres even more, right? So Citus, I started a solutions engineering team. I built a team with multiple solutions engineers, and we would go in, we'd help people to scale their Postgres deployments with any kinds of scalability issues they were having using Citus. Then at Microsoft, I was leading different customer-facing teams within engineering, but like the most largest customers which Microsoft had using Postgres, like they would need help and support from engineering. So I was working with them to make them successful. And then in the last year and a half at Microsoft, I was managing the open source Postgres team. So we had four Postgres committers at Microsoft out of like, there were 28 at the time, now there's 31. But that's like a very small group of people who mainly drive development in core Postgres. And I had the fortune of managing that team. So very talented engineers, great amount of Postgres expertise. So I've been lucky to have experience in different ways as an extension developer, as a customer-facing engineer, helping people use Postgres, and then also understanding how the development of Postgres works and supporting it. So I've had like, hopefully I have a well-rounded perspective thanks to these experiences.
And that's very cool. In fact, one of the part of our audience is basically tech guys, and mm-hmm. I guess they would be really curious to hear more about like this Postgres evolution, right? So you have extensively like worked with Postgres for a decade, right? Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, how have you seen Postgres evolve and adapt to various like industry demands? Can you talk more about that?
So I think like maybe I'll talk a little bit from an internal journey standpoint and then also from an industry demands. So I mean, as of today, I would say Postgres is probably the only community run database at this point, like at a large scale, right? Like there's newer projects and stuff, but that's the only, and that's what makes it unique. So it's like all the key committers to Postgres I'm talking from a code standpoint, but that's also from an evangelism products and everything else too. But like just from a core standpoint, the committers work across like multiple companies, like tens of companies. And then they all work together to make the project better. So that I think is makes it unique in the sense of having a totally well-rounded perspective in building the database core functionality. It's also been licensed permissively from the start. So you can take Postgres, you can fork it, you can create your own databases out of it, which a lot of people have done. And Postgres still survives to the day. So there's something to be said about stinging and survives and thrives, I should say, to the day. So there have been multiple forks, which have actually made the Postgres dialect very, very popular across different markets. So now even if you have like Spanner recently, which has like nothing built on top of Postgres, added language for a Postgres, added the Postgres API, you know. So it's becoming kind of the standard for running SQL on top of any kind of data store. And the common API, just, I mean, I believe part of it is due to its forking and its kind of prevalence everywhere else as a dialect. Initially, Postgres, when I came in, and I'm much later than most several other folks, but when I came in, it had a strong reputation for stability and durability. But from a developer experience standpoint, it wasn't considered as user-friendly. Like setting up a lot of things you would need for an actual production app required using a lot of tools. That's still a problem today, but the tools themselves have gotten much more mature, and the advent of managed services have removed that burden from every single developer, right? So that, I think, over time, Postgres built a solid base, and then adding features became much, much easier. So it added support for JSON, it's added support for Vector. So any new demands which are coming, Postgres is able to kind of evolve either by making changes in core and adding it to core like JSON and JSONB, or with stuff like Vector via extension. So I'd like to say the other unique thing, actually, one more point I'd say is the extensibility of it. It was built to be extensible from the start. And in the, like, I think people have over the last, like, maybe 4 or 5 years, built very, very powerful things using the extension API. So in the beginning, people were building things using it. PostGIS has always existed, right? So there were powerful things built on top of Postgres, but the volume of such things has increased a lot. So like we have columnar storage for Postgres. We built Citus, which was like distributed computation, distributed SQL on Postgres. There's Timescale, which is like a time series thing built on Postgres. There's Postgres ML, which allows you to do ML ops in Postgres. So now, using Postgres as what I would like to call a developer platform or a data platform, as opposed to a database, you can build a lot of different types of things. And it gives you the primitives and a set of solid primitives. So you don't need to think about, you know, will this query run properly? Like it has a query optimizer. Will there be transactional issues, ACID compliance? All of that is just handled for you. And then you can just build functionality on top of that. So that's how I've seen the evolution be. And it's really interesting that more and more people are using Postgres to do more than what its golden path was considered a few years ago, which is your CRUD app or OLTP.
Yeah. And speaking about that, your article on Tempo Stacks emphasizes the potential of Postgres for everything. Mm-hmm. Could you dive into what this concept means to you specifically?
Yeah, so I think to start with, today developers are using too many databases. It's kind of a proliferation of the microservices architecture, right? Like microservices became huge, so every microservice is independent. Each of them can have their own database. So like people started picking what they felt is the best database for that particular subproblem, right? This is just, I'm talking about databases. There's also data tools. So for example, there are SAS APIs for geocoding. There's SAS APIs for various like smaller things which you could do self-hosted on a Postgres database, right? So that's a problem today. Everybody agrees that, you know, there's too many data tools. Like you then end up adding like 5 different ETL tools on top of it. And like if you have an issue debugging, it becomes a mess because you don't know which part of the system messed up. You can't build expertise in all of them, you know. So I think all of those problems are becoming more and more prevalent, which is the problem we want to solve. Now, it's been kind of a meme for a few years now that just use Postgres or use Postgres for everything. Like start hearing this on Hacker News, on different like Dev2 or other kind of developer platforms where people are, oh, I was just doing this using Postgres. I don't know why you need this other product. But it's still, in my opinion, a very small subset of people who can do all of this with Postgres, because it's not that easy to find the right extension, to deploy the right extension. And it's not just the extension or the database, there's tooling on top of it. So you need metrics. You know, if a dedicated vector database exists, it will not just give you the data tool, it will give you kind of integrations with the rest of the ecosystem. It will give you specific metrics around recall and you know, accuracy and latency. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So that experience hasn't been built out, which is why I feel people are using Postgres to build warehouses, geospatial apps, vector search, ML, but that is not well spread. So that's our goal at Tembo, is like we want to make it possible for everybody or every developer to be able to do more with Postgres. And we're starting with extensions and with stacks, but I'd like it to be every functionality Postgres has. It should be easy for every developer to use it, and you not just use it properly, you know, use it to make the most of it. So that's what our goal with Postgres for Everything is to give you optimized Postgres instances for your use cases, instead of taking a toolbox approach, which is, oh, Postgres is a great toolbox, but you know, you have to read a 6,000 page manual to figure out, you know, how to use each tool. We want to give you, okay, this is what you want to do. This is your best Postgres instance for doing this kind of work.
Yeah. And you mentioned this, and I would like to go a bit deeper. In the era of AI, how do you view Postgres and its ability to stand up to vector databases, right? And what are your thoughts on their, you know, positioning in this rapidly evolving landscape?
So I think, in general about AI, there are some thoughts, but like, let's kind of double click into vector to start, and then we could expand. So I think now all the vectors are generated primarily from your OLTP data, right? So your OLTP data already lives in Postgres. So if Postgres has the ability to do vector search in a fast, good enough manner, there is no reason for you to deploy another tool. The other part of it is when you share the results of a vector search, you're not just sharing those arrays of integers or floats. Arrays of floats as a way to share information. You want to tie it to other pieces of information in your data. So when you do a similarity search for find me similar products, you don't want to just give the name of the product, right? You want to give other information about the product, which is again living in your OLTP store. So I feel like you may do like a very aggressive kind of approach of keeping everything in the quote unquote best tool for that job, but you end up adding so many layers and so much latency that even from a performance standpoint, in my opinion, it doesn't hold up. So I think like Postgres has a data type called PG Vector, which allows you to store vector data. We built an extension called PG Vectorize, which allows you to access all of these models from SQL within Postgres. So you could pick any Hugging Face model you like and say, convert this column into embeddings. And you do that right within your Postgres database, and then you can query it and search it right there. So I feel there is, like on a theoretical benchmark, you might find something be better or not be better, or practically speaking, you, like sending data from your OLTP database to the vector database, keeping them in sync. Your vector database is not ACID. You run into other problems there. Getting the results back, then augmenting it with other information which exists in your original operational database and putting it to the user is just too complicated and doesn't need to be. So that's how I feel about specifically vector search. But in general, in the age of AI, I think one, the amount of data is growing. It's been growing irrespective. Like, I think AI is just, you know, boosted that even more. It's increased the slope of the curve, if you will, but it was still kind of growing at a very rapid rate, pace. And then the types of needs you have from your data is also very rapidly evolving. So it's not kind of, oh, I created some models, like data model. I created a data model for my data warehouse and it's going to stay that way because I know what exactly users are going to do with it, but that's changing. So that, in my opinion, makes a bigger case, in my opinion, for a Swiss knife kind of database so that you can rapidly evolve it to your evolving needs of your application.
Yeah, I guess we can talk about Postgres for another couple hours.
Yeah, I think I can do that.
Yeah, but let's touch some other topics as well. So in my previous conversation with Jonathan Smith, the chief of staff at Tembo, he emphasized the benefits of global hiring for Tembo, right? Mm-hmm. And for global expansion, in fact. So as the CTO, how has the company smartly used a wide range of talents from your point of view, and what benefits have you seen in expertise and innovations by including like a global talent?
Yeah, so I mean, one, I'd start by saying Postgres expertise is spread around the world, right? So the Postgres developers, the core committee, the contributors, etc., are obviously spread across all the globe. There's different consulting companies for Postgres in different parts of the globe. There is obviously the users and developers are kind of all over the world, right? So I think it's really important to be a successful Postgres company to have a global presence, just because you can get the best of talent. you know, who are experts in Postgres. So that's the main premise, like if I were to super simplify it, right? Now, building a company like ours requires expertise in various different areas, which is not hard to find, which is not easy to find in one location. So for example, we are operating, running and operating Postgres. So operating Postgres is different from kind of building Postgres, right? Like you need database internals knowledge to be able to build Postgres or improve, add features in that. And it's different to have an operational knowledge or a SaaS knowledge. You need infrastructure knowledge. You need DevOps knowledge, right? For that, we also need kind of DevRel is an important part of our business because our business is, it's important for you to speak the language of the developers. So it makes it easy for them to do what you're offering. So all of these aspects, I think, require great expertise. And we found it easier to find expertise in a global way. It would be unfair for me to say that we are like, you know, we have equal employees in the US and outside of the US, but we, for a team of our size, we have several employees outside of the US. And even in the US, we have employees in the East Coast, in the West Coast, I'm in the West Coast, so on and so forth. So we are fairly remote in that sense. We have like 2-3 people in New York as well. So it's kind of spread all around. So we've been able to grab talent where they are. And also in today's world, like honestly, the really good people don't want to keep moving for jobs. So that's another thing. Whereas like maybe 10 years ago, people would be open to doing that. But here, people who have options, they would prefer to not do that. True. So that becomes a constraint to hiring, in my opinion, if we kind of mandate something like that.
That's true. And speaking about those great talent that you mentioned, could you share maybe which regions, countries Tambo is currently focused on in terms of global hiring, or maybe from your previous experience, which regions or countries you can highlight, saying like those regions are really good in terms of hiring like a really great Postgres like a specialist?
So I'll tell about my previous role, so and then I'll talk about Tambo too. So I mean, previous team was much more global, so that's why I'll start there, right? And Tambo, we will be at that scale, but we're not yet. So just my Postgres team at Microsoft, right? We had 7 people in the team, including myself. And then we were 3 of us in the US, 2 in New Zealand, 1 in Europe, and 2 in Turkey. Like, you know, so that was like, that was the team, that was the spread of the team. And that's because we needed very core experts in Postgres internals and people who've become committers to Postgres.
Two in Turkey, yes, you mentioned, yeah?
Two in Turkey. So I think it was like a very unique mix of people. It made having a all hands very hard because like New Zealand and Turkey don't really mix well in terms of time zones. But like other than that, I think it taught me a lot about running a global team, you know, how do you build the right processes to run a global team. At Tambo, we currently have employees in Germany, in India, and in the US. Those are the 3 geographies right now where we have like full-time employees.
And as the CTO, how do you check this technical abilities and cultural match of candidates from different regions, different countries? Have you had to change how you evaluate them over time?
Absolutely. I think this is like, so one, like we've made mistakes also, you know, while hiring. So I can talk about them too. But like typically we've evolved to a process of general screening questions, you know, just the standard interview, 1 round of coding, and 1 more round of pair programming. So we give them an actual problem, we sit with them, and then have them work with one of our engineers in solving that problem. We've added a bunch of these things based on the challenges we've run into. I think one challenge of being a global team is you don't really get a lot of face time, or if let's say we have someone in India or in Europe and most of the other senior staff in the US, you get stuck, and then you get stuck for 4 hours because nobody else is going to wake up to help you. So that I feel is a thing I've started evaluating more, you know, as we make the hire. So someone might be a great person from an engineering standpoint, but if they are not able to execute independently, then I think that's something which I'm being much more careful about hiring, you know. So that's one thing I keep in mind, which is why my screening questions have more questions in that regard. So like especially in a startup, like shipping is very important. You need to be fast at the stuff you produce. So I've started valuing domain knowledge much more, especially in the remote hires, because like we won't have the time, energy, time zone overlap to be able to ramp them up to the ability to, like, if they have a lot of potential but like are totally unfamiliar with the thing, unless they are independently able to ramp themselves up, it will be hard for them to be successful, especially with the demands of an early stage startup. So that's a candidate who maybe I would have hired at Microsoft, right? But I may not hire in a 15-20 person company. So the other thing, we've also had someone who was doing multiple jobs and they accepted our offer, and those things also become harder to check in a remote environment. So we've added some questions. I mean, there were signs we should have caught it earlier, in the sense of like they wanted to use a different name, they didn't want to update their LinkedIn. There were signs, but we're like, okay, maybe that person is really private. But you know, we've run into that situation as well. So I think there have been a few challenges, but I think we've evolved our processes from questions, doing the pair programming to see how they can work in a more independent manner and how they work with others. And then doing coding kind of rounds to kind of judge how good they are to start to get go from start.
Yeah. And, you know, I work with thousands of CTOs, like of different startups, and there are kind of two camps, you know. Some CTOs think it is okay if a candidate uses AI to help solve coding challenges, for example, because it shows they know how to use tools smartly, you know, things like that. Other CTOs think using AI is like a cheating and prefer to see candidates code on a blackboard, you know? So what is your take on this? Do you think using AI, you know, in tasks is smart or not fair?
So I think it depends on what you're evaluating for, you know? So if you're evaluating, like if you give someone a complicated project, right? You expect them to be able to, you give them more tools to be able to solve that problem, right? Like for example, if I give you a simple like 10 line coding problem, which is meant to evaluate whether you can write code or not, right? That's the goal of the problem. Then I would prefer that you don't use AI, because I just want to check how good you are at reading code, at writing code, right? But if I'm trying to evaluate, can you do this largest project? Can you break it down into smaller things? And then for smaller pieces, you can use AI to, or you can use Copilot or whatever. Like I personally have never paid emphasis to syntax, for example, I'm not doing coding interviews anymore. Like, but personally, like I do different like culture fit and those kinds of things more so. But when I used to do them, I still would be like, okay, write a comment saying what you want to do, and this is what I'm assuming as the syntax. And then I would allow them to access Google at that time, you know, to be able to look up the syntax. So my take is, it depends on what you're evaluating and the role. If you are looking for an architect type role, it may not be important they write all the code independently, right? But if you're expecting someone to be a code reviewer, you know, and like be sign off on kind of fairly critical pieces of code, I mean, we all know how AI is great until it's not, right? Like, so you'll have these tools where like everything will look nice and oh, it's generating great suggestions, and then you'll have a bug, and then you'll be like, so that's what I expect in senior engineers. So that's, if to evaluate that skill, I would probably not recommend the usage of AI.
That's awesome. So I guess my final question, looking ahead, what is on the horizon for Tambo? Are there specific like milestones or developments in the pipeline that you are particularly excited about or that you would like to share with our community?
So I'm excited. I've been very excited and motivated in the last month or two, because one, we GA'd in January. So since then, we've had an influx of a lot of users on our platform. So that has allowed us to rapidly evolve the platform to meet the users' needs, right? And the fact that so many people want to try it out adds more validation to what we are building. Like people want what we are building. So we are working on solidifying, several aspects of the initial user experience, for example, with the customers and moving them into production. We've had like several production use cases already in the last month or so. So I'm motivated by that. what we are building is, for example, right now, as I said, a lot of our mission is making it very easy for a non-database expert to be able to achieve what a database expert would. So we are working on building, we have already 10 stacks, which we've released for 10 specific workloads. Our goal is to increase that multifold by the end of the year. So like, I want you to be able to come into our platform and say, I want to build this and get a dedicated tuned Postgres instance for that. So that's the vision we are building towards. In terms of infrastructure capabilities, we are right now present only on AWS, but we want to add, we will be adding support for GCP and Azure, you know, as we have more and more users requesting those platforms. And lastly, I would say one thing which, I would like to say is like lot like the journey of app devs doing more database work has prompted to build more features which make it easy for app devs to do things. So as an example, like we are going to build like auto scaling, but not in a very extreme manner. Like we would, you know, there is like you see kind of these horror stories sometimes where people are like, oh, I got a bill of, you know, 10x more bill because like there was a DDoS attack on my thing and then suddenly I got auto scaled to something crazy. So I think there is like pros and cons of that approach, but we want to build auto scaling, auto tuning as two features to make it much easier for developers. Like I know for a fact that there are a lot of unoptimized Postgres instances around. And if there, someone could scale it down by, you know, half a CPU, and see how it performs before doing kind of a very drastic scale up, scale down operation, I think that would be very useful. So we are excited about building features like that also. So those are kind of the main set of things which we are focused on.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your insights on like a Postgres, on your projects, on your future projects, and on global coding. It's been a fantastic discussion that our audience will definitely enjoy. Thank you and stay safe.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Matt.